So let's talk a little bit about relapse disease. And in this case, you use consolidation bevacizumab, and that was obviously looked at in the so-called ATHERA trial. Can you talk about what that trial looked at and how you apply that to your patients and why you decided to give this patient consolidation, and what are some situations where you wouldn't have used it?
Yeah, so the ATHERA trial was a randomized trial that looked at the use of brentuximab vedotin. You can call it consolidation, you can call it maintenance therapy, but the use of brentuximab vedotin after autologous stem cell transplant for relapsed refractory Hodgkin lymphoma. And in that trial, they did select patients that would be considered slightly higher risk. So they included patients with primary refractory Hodgkin lymphoma or patients with relapsed Hodgkin lymphoma that would be considered higher risk, those that relapsed within 12 months or those that had an extranodal involvement at the time of their relapse. And in that randomized controlled trial, what we learned was that patients who received the brentuximab vedotin for a year, the plan was to give them 16 doses over the course of a year's time. Patients who went down that route actually had a much improved progression-free survival. At the time the trial was analyzed, there was no overall survival benefit, but it was still very early days since we know patients do have other therapies that they can receive following relapse. But given the substantial improvement in progression-free survival, you know, we're hopeful that this might actually improve the cure rate post-autologous transplant in some patients. So in our own clinic, we do offer patients brentuximab vedotin maintenance after stem cell transplant. As I said, the study did enroll higher risk patients, and the patient I just described would fall into that high risk category because he had really was an extranodal recurrence of this disease. Although I think you really have to look at that data and say, is there any rationale that other patients who are undergoing stem cell transplant from, you know, for Hodgkin lymphoma wouldn't benefit? Just because the trial picked out the high-risk population, does it mean that it might not offer benefit to other patients? I personally think that all patients that relapse with Hodgkin lymphoma are of relatively high risk. So we don't make a distinction based on their presentation at relapse, but we're really offering it to anybody following autologous stem cell transplant, regardless of whether or not we perceive them to be high risk as defined by the ATHERA trial or not, because in my mind, they all potentially might benefit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like reminds me of the paradigm, you know, I think in adjuvant therapy of solid tumors like breast cancer, where, you know, a lot of the trials focus on people with higher risk because it's kind of easier to demonstrate the benefit. And then people assume that it's going to apply down the line. Now, this patient, has he completed the year of bevacizumab?
I have to admit, he got to about cycle 8, and then we actually had to stop because he did have cumulative neuropathy that forced us to actually stop it. While the goal is, according to the ATHERA trial, to give them up to 16 doses, which takes a year to administer, I have to say many patients didn't get through the full 16 doses on that trial, either because of neuropathy that developed over time or cytopenias, because you have to remember these patients are coming off a lot of therapy and the stem cell transplant. But regardless, the benefit was seen in the patients that were taken down the route of maintenance. So I think that the goal is, as long as the patient doesn't have a contraindication, to administer the maintenance, and then it needs to be tailored to patient tolerance. But I think probably what we learned from the trial is going down that route seems to provide benefit, even though not everybody is probably going to get through the 16 cycles.
What exactly did he experience in terms of neuropathy? And sort of in general, how much neuropathy does it take for you to stop treatment?
So most of these patients do develop a peripheral neuropathy that typically can present initially as a sensory neuropathy with tingling and numbness in the fingers and toes. So very similar to what we see with vincristine that we routinely use, for example, with R-CHOP. But it is a little bit different. So drugs like brentuximab vedotin much more typically can cause also a painful neuropathy. So he started to develop very painful sensation in his fingers primarily that was really debilitating for him. You know, there is a grading scale for neuropathy, and grade 2 would suggest a patient that really it is starting to impact quite significantly their daily activities. So I would say that once a patient has grade 2 or higher neuropathy that manifests itself, that's usually a point in time when I would stop.